This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. The television version of this show airs on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. The federal government sets a minimum wage that's already far too low and has become a major campaign issue during this presidential election. But did you know that it's legal to pay disabled Americans below minimum wage? According to labor reporter Mike Elk, quote, currently, under the Fair Labor Standards Act, a certified sheltered workshop can pay disabled Americans less than the minimum wage, sometimes as little as pennies per hour. While there has been some piecemeal progress at the state and federal level, the overall law remains in place. But now, bipartisan support has emerged for a new bill called the Time Act that would do away with the exception for disabled workers. Mike Elk is a senior labor reporter at Payday Report and a member of the Washington Baltimore News Guild. He previously served as senior labor reporter at Politico and at In These Times magazine. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Great to be on the show.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, so first explain how it comes from, what era this whole idea of this exception for disabled workers comes from. It just, you know, we know that, for example, inmates are paid below minimum wage. There have been exceptions for tipped workers. But frankly, I didn't realize that there was an exception for disabled workers as well.
Well, Sonali, it really goes back to the 1930s.
Wow.
Eugenics, where, you know, there was a popular... It wasn't just popular in Germany, but the idea of eugenics was popular in the U.S., which was with that disabled people weren't worthy people, that they weren't full human beings, and that we couldn't do things to help make accommodations to accommodate them. So the 1930s, when they passed the Fair Labor Standards Act, there's an exemption, which is that if someone was disabled, someone could pay them below the minimum wage. Because the argument was, of course, a disabled worker couldn't perform a regular job. So currently, really, it's a relic of the 1930s, and it's a relic of the kind of eugenic thinking that gave rise to the Nazis.
How is it that the Americans with Disabilities Act didn't do away with this?
Well, the big issue is that right now, most of the employers of disabled workers are places like Goodwill. So, for instance, the CEO of Goodwill makes $1 million a year, while he's paying blind guys $1.10 an hour to make Braille books. So what happened really is that the disability organizations profited it quite heavily. The very large ones like Goodwill and ARC were big time profiters. And they argued that eliminating the subminimum wage for disabled workers would lead to the elimination of what they called sheltered workplaces, which were supposed to be training jobs. Mm-hmm. The idea was that workers getting paid below the minimum wage weren't supposed to hold these jobs for long, and if they weren't paid below the minimum wage, they wouldn't be able to hold any other type of job.
So it's almost similar to, it is analogous to the standard argument that you hear from, you know, corporations for raising the federal minimum wage or any minimum wage at the state level as well, that if you raise the minimum wage, it'll drive people out of business because they'll no longer be able to afford to pay people. So similarly for those employers of disabled workers, the argument was that if you raise their minimum wage, they could no longer afford to employ these folks. Is that essentially true?
Well, it's not true. And actually, in Vermont in 2003, they eliminated the subminimum wage for disabled workers. And they found that over the period of a year, actually they doubled the number of disabled workers who were employed. And Vermont now has the highest rate of employment of disabled workers in the U.S.
Wow.
And what they did is
invested
the money credits. They invested it in incentives for corporations to hire disabled workers and to let them undergo training programs. And then they invested the money in social workers. And what they found actually is that a lot of people got out of jobs because what they've claimed forever, and I've interviewed dozens of disabled people on this subject, is that that you can't employ these folks and that they wouldn't have any other job. And Vermont showed that this was not the case, that, you know, it required working with employers. And this really has opened a new front, what Vermont did in 2003. And now at the national level, you have both Republicans and Democrats pushing to eliminate the usage of the subminimum wage.
So are there other states besides Vermont? I mean, obviously, when we want change of this sort, it's better when it happens at the federal level. But in the meantime, besides Vermont, have other states taken on this idea that disabled people are human beings who deserve the same minimum wage as the, you know, as able-bodied folks?
Well, yes, Oregon, New Hampshire, Maryland have all done this, and several other states are in the process of doing it. More importantly, back in 2014, after we wrote an expose, when I was at In These Times, we wrote an expose showing how the federal government was going to raise federal contractors' raises to $10.10 an hour. The Obama administration decided to eliminate the usage of the subminimum wage in federal contracts for disabled workers. So right now, the Obama administration is putting a lot of pressure on states to eliminate the minimum wage.
So let's talk about the Time Act that you've written about. So how is it that we might actually finally see an end to legally paying subminimum wages to disabled workers federally?
Well, I think we could see it because what's happening now is that disability employment has become a bipartisan issue. And since the Americans with Disabilities Act, we've seen a lot more disabled Americans in the workplace. So the number of disabled Americans who couldn't work even 20 years ago has gone up dramatically. And now what you're seeing is actually a lot of Republicans who have disabled children get very engaged on this issue. So, you know, you have the lead sponsor in the House, a Republican congressman from Mississippi, Greg Harper, sponsoring it. And you also have Pete Sessions, you have Nancy Pelosi, you have Jim Levine. You have a whole wide range of different political figures in the House sponsoring it, as well as in the Senate. You have people like Kelly Ayotte of New Hampshire. So a disability is really a bipartisan issue because it really, people don't, you know, even those 43 million disabled Americans, people tend not to care about disability too much until it affects someone they know.
Right. Now, how do the numbers in terms of finances show the impact of having these years and years of subminimum wages? Doesn't, you know, if you're paying disabled workers pennies on the dollar, unless they happen to be born in a wealthy family, doesn't that just feed a cycle of poverty? Does that bear out in poverty statistics?
It does, and recent poverty data shows that during the Obama administration, poverty rates have gone down for every group except disabled workers. So, you know, the poverty rate among disabled workers right now is about 26%. And that's, you know, considering the fact that the poverty line is quite low, the number of people making below 15 bucks an hour is even higher. So, yeah, I mean, it leads to intergenerational poverty among the disabled.
So at this point, what is the kind of lobbying that needs to take place? What is the process? Or what stage is the process for the Time Act? How soon could we see a vote on it? Presumably, if it were to pass the Senate and the House, President Obama would sign it if it's passed for the rest, you know, between now and the end of the year.
It's unclear if it'll get passed in the lame duck, but if Hillary Clinton is elected, she has signaled support for this act. So I could see it happening and passing under her. I mean, obviously, you know, she was a big champion of the implementation of the Americans with Disabilities Act. She's been quite clear and quite passionate about disabilities issues for all of her campaign. So I could see it getting passed in a Hillary administration. However, there's a lot of action at the state level, and I think you're going to see a lot more states move first.
And actually, as a labor reporter who's been covering these issues for a long time, is there a disabled vote, if you will? You know, when people talk about presidential elections, we talk about the black vote and the Latino vote. Is there a disabled vote? And if so, given that one presidential candidate has openly mocked disabled people in public and then, you know, dug his heels in around it, is there a clear trend?
Well, even though Donald Trump has mocked the disabled vote, it is interesting to note that the Republican Party platform and the Democratic Party platform, for the first time ever, both called for the elimination of the subminimum wage for the disabled. So this is something that people like Paul Ryan and other people have talked about.
Are you suggesting that Trump is not somehow representative of the Republican Party?
Not at all.
On everything?
I think on the issue of disability, I think the Republican Party is far more progressive than Trump.
And also, I understand that the Clinton campaign has reached out to disabled voters much more so than we've seen even previous Democrat administrations, or rather campaigns, do. So it's certainly interesting. If this act were to go through, what sort of impact could you see nationwide? I mean, you mentioned what Vermont had done, but it sounds like Vermont didn't just do away with the sub-minimum wages. They actually put money into hiring more social workers, that it was a more holistic approach. Does the Time Act include some of these extra things, or is it just, getting rid of the exception?
Yeah, the Time Act does include some of those things, and some of these things have been passed already as part of the Workforce Investment Act, which was passed last year. So some of these measures have already been built in, and part of what the Time Act is it's sort of codifying a bigger change in how you transition the disabled into regular employment.
And so if this does pass, presumably over time, we would see those poverty statistics improve a little bit for disabled workers?
Oh, certainly. I most certainly think you'd see poverty statistics improve big time.
Yeah. Do you think, Mike, that we also need a public awareness campaign around employment of disabled workers? Because, of course, in addition to the overwhelming amount of a bias facing disabled workers and other realms, on the issue of employment, outlets like Goodwill have been able to make the case that only they and employers like them are interested in hiring disabled workers. Do we need a public awareness campaign about this, about the fact that jobs can be held by disabled workers and that employers ought to consider hiring them and investing in them?
I certainly think we do, and I think we need to have a broader conversation. And I think that conversation needs to start with disabled workers leading it themselves and not be seen as these charity projects or these kind of inspirational figures, but as workers. And I think we do need to see broader campaigns on this level. I think we're starting to see it. I think the Democratic National Convention this year was a big step forward with so many disabled people speaking, and not speaking as inspirational porn, but speaking as minorities in and of themselves. So I think you're starting to see a lot more organizations that are run by disabled people. And I think that's the way we're really going to achieve change, is to get disabled people out front on these issues.
And what is inspiration porn, by the way?
Well, it's the idea of, oh, look at this poor disabled person who overcame something. I myself am disabled. I was born high-functioning autistic. So I've struggled with my own set of issues. And, it's always awful when somebody writes off somebody as disability, because everybody's shaped differently, and it's just another form of diversity. Who determines what's able-bodied and what's not able-bodied? I mean, it's like, who determines what's the proper race? The idea of treating disabled workers as anything other than regular workers harkens back to an age of eugenics in which disabled people were seen as something undesirable. And I think we really, in order to shift that image, have to have disabled people speak for themselves.
So where can people find out more about the Time Act? We don't hear much about this in the news. I mean, when I saw your article about it, I gravitated towards it right away because it's just not being covered much in the media. Is that also not in and of itself a problem, right? That we don't see much of this being covered by our mainstream news?
Well, that's part of the reason why we've launched paydayreport.com. As you know, I was a senior labor reporter at Politico, and I was fired after they refused to give me a disability accommodation. So I used part of my settlement to start paydayreport.com. But obviously, we do need help with fundraising. So if folks want to go to paydayreport.com and become members and subscribe for as little as $3 a month, that would help us a great amount. So you
yourself face discrimination in the workplace over your disability?
We won a big settlement out of Politico after they refused to give me an accommodation. And the accommodation was based on a number of things, and so they decided to fire me instead of giving me the accommodation. So we threatened to sue them, and we got a settlement. And so we've used the money, and we've used this money just not to cover disabled workers, but also Southern workers who were ignored. What I think we really need to do is build a new media system, have shows like yours, have sites like paydayreport.com, and really build up a brand new system of media to sort of bring out these stories that the corporate media is not talking about.
And does Payday Report also hire disabled workers and journalists and writers? And is that something that you want to promote?
Yeah, I mean, look, I pay everybody, you know, I don't have a lot of people. It's mainly just me. And then I hire contractors at $20 an hour. But we practice what we preach and we're run in an equitable way. And we have a bit of a union hiring hall. And, you know, we were initially set up as a worker-owned co-op. And so, yeah, you know, we're trying to do that.
So a unionized workplace as well.
Yeah.
Sounds fantastic. Don't we all deserve union representation? Mike, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. So paydayreport.com is the best place to read your piece about this.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll post a link to that from our website later today. Thanks so much and good luck to you.
Thanks for having me on.
My guest is Mike Elk. He is senior labor reporter at Payday Report. He's also a member of the Washington Baltimore News Guild and previously served as senior labor reporter at Politico and in These Times magazine. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. And you can also find us on Twitter at twitter.com/ruwithsonali.